Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to extend the welcome to all of the clients from St George, Bank of South Australia, and also the Bank of Melbourne. With me, I have Andrew Donnell from our foreign exchange desk in Sydney. I also have Sam Tennis, who manages the financial market specialist in Sydney. I'm also joined by Mark Goldsmith in Bank of South Australia in Adelaide, and also Andrew Pryor in Melbourne from the Bank of Melbourne. As usual, I will speak for about 20 minutes, just giving you a bit of an update and an outlook on events in Australia and offshore, and then I'll open the session to questions and answers, which always prove very beneficial for everybody. I'll start off with Europe, because Europe remains in the spotlight. There continues to be a lot of uncertainty about the outlook for Europe, particularly as forecasting what will happen in Europe involves forecasting what the politicians will do, and that is increasingly difficult given that there are 17 members that ordinarily need to ratify any sort of solutions. Earlier this year, we were cautiously optimistic about Europe, mainly because we felt that if European policymakers and leaders could contain the problem to only Greece, that the contagion wouldn't spread, but the problem has not been contained to Greece and the contagion is spreading. The list of countries affected is growing. In the spotlight now is Italy, which has seen its long-term bond yields breach 7%, when Portugal, Ireland and Greece saw their long-term yields breach these levels, that's when they had to seek a bailout. So the market is increasingly nervous about Italy. The market's also nervous about France, which carries a AAA rating but has a bigger debt than other countries with a AAA rating, and the market does worry perhaps they will also be downgraded. And we've seen some other European countries downgrade. For example, Belgium was downgraded the other night, for instance. There doesn't appear to be one obvious single swift solution for Europe, and that is part of the reason why we're increasingly worried. One of the most obvious solutions is some sort of fiscal union where you would issue a common Eurozone bond. However, there does not seem to be any sort of support for that, and ultimately the solutions that are being talked about involve tinkering at the edges and not really getting to the guts of the solution. It has been talked about one or more countries pulling out of the EU, but really there's no legislation for that, and if that did occur, that wouldn't necessarily stabilise the mess that's occurring at the moment, as it would increase the level of uncertainty in the short term. So the outlook for Europe is deteriorating. We're also worried because the funding pressures are growing. Now, at the moment, the funding stresses in Europe are still what you'd characterise as moderate compared to the worst of the GFC, but they are growing. They're fairly contained to Europe, but they are spreading to other markets as well, and there's some evidence that lending's been pared back by European banks. So these funding pressures are a concern, and it's something we need to keep on the radar screen, and it means that credit growth will likely be weak globally whilst this is the case. Just to give you an example, short-term money market spreads in Europe, so they represent the cost of borrowing in a short-term money market, have blown out to almost 100 basis points from about 20 basis points in July. The worst of the GFC, they're a touch above 200 basis points. So we're nowhere near the worst of the GFC, but we certainly have seen these spreads blow out considerably. In Australia, the possibility of a sharp economic deterioration in Europe really represents a downside risk for the Aussie economy, which is one of the key reasons why the RBA would have delivered the rate cut it did in November. Given our very strong links with Asia, particularly China, it is likely that we will be less affected than other countries by the deterioration in Europe, but the economy will still be affected by the falls in asset prices and weaker household and business confidence, and we're seeing a little bit of that now. Commodity markets are also weakening, and growth in domestic incomes are likely to be lower. Now, the resources sector remains pretty robust. There's a huge pipeline of committed LNG projects that are expected to continue, but you would obviously expect some planned expansions of coal and iron ore, for example, to be delayed. It's also likely that we'll see the Aussie dollar continue to slide, given that it is a barometer of global growth and also given the heightened risk aversion. And I'll come back to the Aussie dollar in a little bit. Markets overall remain in a tenuous state. Uncertainty is high, volatility is high. Year-end, very much so, looks like it's already started. And that's likely to remain the case until at least the middle of January. That may be one of the reasons why the German debt auction last week was so poorly received. It was the weakest demand since the euro was launched. It can reflect the lack of confidence in Europe, but it might also reflect the fact that year-end has started early, given the darkening outlook about the global economy. So basically, for the next 2 months at least, if not longer, volatility will be a core theme and so will uncertainty, and that can affect hiring plans and also business spending, and it might see caution into households as well. And cash is probably likely to be a little bit more dominant as an asset class in that sort of backdrop. In Australia, the patchwork economy really continues. Most of the trends haven't really changed. The weak sectors like retail spending, housing, continue to be the weak sectors. However, the data has continued to improve over the last 2 to 3 months in that area. Although the trend is still a soft one, the strength continues to be the terms of trade, which is providing a strong income injection to Australia, and also CapEx numbers. Now, what is the focus for the Australian economy, just leaving Europe aside, is today, in fact, probably a few minutes ago, the government would have released its mid-year economic and fiscal outlook for 2011-2012. That's essentially an update on the budget numbers that were published in May. You might recall the government was looking for a deficit of $22.6 billion this financial year, but was aiming to return to surplus in 2012-2013 with a $3.5 billion surplus. Those numbers are likely to change, partly because you do have the carbon pricing that wasn't reflected in the main numbers, also because some of the growth numbers that these figurings would have relied on in May have changed. Obviously, Europe has deteriorated quite markedly since May. I expect that the surplus will be reduced for 2012-2013. The government will try to implement spending cuts in order to still try to get to that surplus. I think there's an undue focus on the surplus given the backdrop in the economy at the moment, but I think that's been driven by political factors. The other big factor on the domestic economic calendar will be the GDP numbers. So they are published next week on Wednesday, and we'll get an update on how fast the economy grew over the 3 months to September. We're actually looking for a very solid number at the moment. It's a preliminary forecast because the partial economic indicators that feed into the entire GDP puzzle have only just really started to come through. So we've had construction work done that was extremely solid. It rose by 12.5% in Q3, which suggests that if GDP was measured by that partial indicator alone, GDP would have jumped 1.7%. Now, in the June quarter, the economy did expand by 1.2%. We're looking for a similar outcome this quarter. That'll take the annual rate from 1.4 to 2.3%. Now, 2.3% is still below trend or below par. Something that is closer to trend or par is about 3% or 3 and a little bit. So we are looking for a solid number to come through there. The RBA governor spoke at the Australian Business Economist annual dinner last week, but he really did not give much away in terms of his thoughts on Europe or even on the rates outlook. It was a pretty balanced speech with very little divulged. Now, I spoke quite a bit about funding markets in Europe. It's probably just worth also considering the funding markets here. There is a slight uptick in funding pressures that's emerged in Australia, but nothing of significance to date. Australian banks, of course, got through the GFC relatively well compared to everybody else. This time round, US money markets are pretty desperate to give money to Australia. Also, Canada, Japan and Scandinavia seem to be some hot spots. That reflects the chase for yield. That's a little bit different to the GFC experience when those markets in the US really froze up. Also, banks in Australia since the GFC have reduced their reliance on wholesale funding and increased their reliance on retail deposits, which are a more stable form of funding. So to some degree, banks in Australia might be able to ride through the storm, at least in the near term, for a little while. That doesn't mean they won't face higher funding pressures, because obviously they still do rely on wholesale funding for some of their funding. And this market does seem to be at a risk of deteriorating given what's happening in Europe. Now, swap rates have come down a long way, and that's reflecting the lower government bond yields and the lower growth outlook both overseas and in some of the key advanced economies, as well as in Australia. The growth outlook is not as strong as what it was, say, earlier this year. So if you look at three-year swap rates, for instance, they've come down from about 5.25% in early July to sit at 3.9% right now. At the height of the GFC, they were sitting at about 3.4%. So we're really only about 50 basis points away from what the lows were at for three-year swap rates. Same thing for the 5 years. 5 year swap rates down from about 5.4% to about 4.2% now. And during the worst of the GFC, they got to as low as 3.8%. So we're only about 40 basis points away from that now. You might be aware that fixed mortgage rates work off swap rates, and swap rates obviously are ticking over all the time, whereas the variable mortgage rate typically is moved when the RBA officially moves its cash rate. Now, given where swap rates are at the moment, given they're not very far from the lows that we saw during the GFC, it really means that interest rate markets are pricing something as nasty as the GFC, and also pricing in a cash rate as low as 3% from the RBA by the middle of next year. And I say 3% because during the height of the GFC, the RBA did cut the cash rate to 3%, and at the moment we do stand at 4.5%. Now, it's worth noting that a recent cash rate survey of all the economists around town, including ourselves, and there were 19 polled, the range of forecasts for the cash rate by the end of next year was 3.75% to 5.25%. So no one is forecasting anything as low as 3%. We certainly couldn't fully rule out 3% given the backdrop and the high degree of uncertainty about Europe, but it seems that the odds are pretty long at the moment for something as low as 3%. So that tells us that the swap rates down at these levels look fairly attractive, and it might be an opportunity for borrowers to look at really hedging their interest rate exposures at these sorts of swap rates. Certainly swap rates might fall a little bit further from here, but given they are pricing in something just as bad as the GFC, there is potentially some move for a recovery yields to go higher. So something worth looking at. As I said, we can't fully rule out something as nasty as the GFC, but one could make the argument that there are a number of factors that might mean we won't see something as bad as the GFC, although we might get something close to it. Firstly, regulation is tighter since the GFC. Banks are generally better capitalised. They have been more conservative since the GFC occurred. Most banks in the advanced economies of any significant size have gone through stress tests, so they do understand where their exposures are and they understand those exposures better. Government bonds, which is at the height of the problem at the moment, are much simpler instruments and easy to understand compared with structured credit products, which were at the centre of the storm during the GFC. And bear in mind, structured credit products have embedded, lots of embedded fees and lots of embedded products within it, which complicated understanding of exposures. Corporate balance sheets are also in better shape. Of course, this time round, policymakers to some extent have their hands tied because the cash rate in many advanced economies is already low, so there's not a lot of room for cash rates to be cut further to stimulate economies in Europe or the US or Japan or the UK, for instance. And the government in these countries already have high levels of debt on their books, which will also constrain the policy response. However, one can still make the case that perhaps we won't see something as bad as the GFC, although we can't fully rule it out. In terms of our view for the RBA, we think that the RBA will cut rates again. They did indicate they want to get towards a more neutral level. Now, the current cash rate is 4.5%. No one quite knows exactly where the neutral rate is, but we can estimate it using Taylor modelling. And if we do that, we sort of get a range for the neutral rate of about 4.25% to 4.5%. So we would think that there's at least one more rate cut in store from the RBA, most likely in February, but really what is going to determine when the next rate cut occurs and how many rate cuts we get will really be determined by Europe. The deeper the European sovereign debt crisis gets, the more rate cuts we will see from the RBA here in order to give the Australian economy some resilience from, you know, the weakening global backdrop. Now, there is some evidence that China is being affected by what's happening in Europe. We are seeing trade flows moderate to some extent, although they're moderating from a very, very high level, and therefore trade flows are still very resilient. Overall, the Chinese economy is showing some signs of slowing, but the policymakers in China did want to moderate a slowdown anyway, regardless of what was happening in Europe, because they were grappling with an inflation problem. But there are some rumours that China might be on the brink of soon easing some of its policy in order to give its economy a little bit of a boost given the backdrop in Europe. As I said, Australia won't be immune from any slowdown in Europe, nor will China, but certainly Asia and Australia should hold up a lot better than other advanced economies, just as we saw during the GFC. In terms of the Aussie dollar, there are many reasons to buy the Aussie dollar. We have attractive interest rates. Demand for our debt is high due to our attractive interest rates. We've got strong links with Asia. Our banking system is pretty sound, as is our financial system. But the Aussie dollar does not like it when investors are nervous and when the global growth outlook is darkening. And those two factors are what are overwhelming the Aussie dollar at the moment, and we're seeing the Aussie dollar tread lower. In the very near term, the Aussie dollar is likely to get towards the 95-cent handle and towards 93.5 cents within the next month or two, in my opinion, given that I'm increasingly pessimistic about what's happening in Europe.